can you now tell me the panel, why do you want this position of the Public Service Commission?
When I saw the advert for Public Service Commission, I thought I will be the right candidate. I've been in the public service. I regard myself as a public servant. I've worked in the offices, in the corridors of public service, whether you are in the judiciary or anywhere. To me, you are a public servant. You are serving the public. And I've wanted so much to be there to help the public, even in the judiciary. Right now, I am working with the public. I am helping the public in every way that I can, whether I'm in the bench or whatever I'm doing. Remember, the district court is where you contact with each and every person, each and every case, whether it goes to the High Court, whether it goes to the up until the Constitutional Court. That's where it starts most of the time. I work with the children. We work with the public. So, and I have seen some gaps, that there are gaps between us public servants and our communities and the people out there. And then I was asking myself, how can I help? Because you are there in the judiciary. Now there are those separation of powers. It's not like before when I was starting, where the head of the court will oversee everyone. Now where I am, you are just in the judiciary, you are there, you cannot say anything about the other things that are happening because of those separation of powers. So I thought, if I'm in the public, if I'm in the Public Service Commission, then at least I will go down to the people and be able to help and ask myself questions. So what went wrong between our people and our public service, our department? What went wrong? How can I be of help in order to bridge that gap, in order to bring us closer together?
The Public Service Commission derives its mandate of promoting the values and principles as outlined in Section 195 of the Constitution. What is your understanding of these values and principles?
Section 195 of our Constitution is what I understand. Practically, I don't want to go into the theory of it. It talks about the constitutional values and principles, the rights of people. How, like I said, how do we bridge that gap? the professionalism of the public servant. How do we use our resources in order for the people to be happy out there? Remember, we are public servants. We are servants of the people. We are serving them. And then the ethics of the public servants. How do we hold ourselves, the integrity that we have, the rights of the people, they should be protected. To me, Section 195, it should not be only that Section 195. It must go to the foundation of our Constitution, in Section 1 of our Constitution, where the fundamentals, the principles and values of a public servant should be. Our human resources, how do we employ our people into the public service, the interference of politics in employment, the training of our public service, the skills that are needed in public service in order to help the people out there. So to me, that is the practicality of Section 195. In order to promote those values, those principles that are enshrined in the Constitution, how do we go about it? Remember, human resource, to me, I believe that's where it all starts, because that's where everyone gets appointed. So I believe how do we empower our public servants in order to be of service to the people out there?
Can you briefly tell us in your own understanding the functions of the Public Service Commission?
My understanding, the Public Service Commission, that is theory. It's not, what can I say? It's not that people don't know more about it. So even when we are there, we didn't even know that there is Public Service Commission, until maybe you will read the Constitution, and then, or you will hear people talking about it, and then you will read some materials and all that. The function, it is to oversee our public service, to promote the constitutional values and principles that are enshrined in the Section 195 of our Constitution, to monitor, to evaluate, to investigate what the employees, the grievances of the employees, and to see to it that the public service functions well in order to serve our community.
And as I have said, now it will be the turn of the members to ask questions. They will introduce themselves as they do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Good morning to the candidate.
Good morning.
I'm Dr. Leon Schreiber, member of this committee. So my question relates to the powers and functions and the legislative mandate of the Public Service Commission. The Constitution provides for a much stronger role for the PSC in upholding the principles of public administration. One of the functions is to, quote, give directions aimed at ensuring that personnel procedures relating to recruitment, transfers, promotions, and dismissals comply with the values and principles of public administration. So my first part of my question is, what can be and what is, in your view, the best strategy to assist the Public Service Commission to ensure that government departments appoint competent and dedicated public servants, particularly at senior management level? Thank you.
Thank you, sir, for that question. I believe as a Public Service Commission, we should, when we talk about our human resource, as the question implies, that's where we start. We should employ people that their skills, they go together with the job that they are supposed to be doing. And when we transfer, you see that there are so many things. Let me be practical. At a workplace, Ms. Nisi doesn't like the doctor. You are just transferred to another department where your skills are not needed. I believe the human resource should know that Ms. Nisi is skilled on this and or on legal. I cannot be transferred to go and deal with the finances because I won't be of any use there. So I believe the human resource should come, we should help the human resource in order to transfer people that are skilled to go and do the work that they are supposed to do, that they are skilled in doing, that they are trained in doing. Because otherwise, when I get employed, I am trained in a certain field, and then all of a sudden I'm deployed to a work environment where I don't fit, and then I go there, I don't do anything. That is why we find, even in my office, that is where you find most people, they are just seated in offices because they were transferred by their managers who don't like them anymore. They just shift them to another section where they are not of help. So we should be looking at people like that. When I come to that, we're talking with managing our wage bill. But there are so many people who get salaries without doing the job. They are so demoralized to go to work because they don't even know what they are going to do. Someone, in close call, they don't want them. And they have deployed them to a certain section where they are not of help. So I believe people should be skilled, trained, and then empower them on what they are doing, always training the people in order to do the work so that we can compete also with the private sector. If you don't like someone, you are not at work to like someone. You are at work with someone. And then they should, if the person is not doing the work, let's apply the consequence management and correct the situation. Instead of just deploying them, shift them to a section where they are not of help, they just waiting for the phone to say you've got the salary, the 15th, it's the 30th, without them doing anything. So I think we can help them, the human resource, vetting people, not employing people with criminal records. If we start with the vetting, we will know that Ms. Mnisi, she's got criminal records and all that. This we cannot employ because daily there are those departments that are working with people daily. So that's where I believe even corruption lies. They work with people daily, and these people, they are coming from the justice system. They have already been sentenced. So it is for us to help the Public Service Commission to come up with proper procedures in order to appoint people to the best place position they are supposed to be.
Thank you for that answer, Mr. Mnisi. I just want to check with you, in your view, currently in both in theory and in practice, so let's say in law and in practice, do you think the Public Service Commission has enough teeth and enough power to do the kind of things that you are talking about? Or does it actually need to strengthen both in theory and in practice those powers?
According to me, I don't know how the panel will take this. I don't think it does have enough teeth because they do give recommendations. They can give remedial actions, consequential management, how to help a person. But the senior managers, do they take this into consideration? Public Service Commission, I believe they write report after report, but has it ever been implemented? Have they ever gone back to find out if our SMSs are implementing the remedial actions or the corrective actions that should be taken against employees? So I think we should strengthen it.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Ms. Mnisi.
Good morning.
My name is Mainale, former member of the committee. Probably thank you very much for availing yourself.
Thank you for calling me.
Interacting with your good staff. Having said that, Chair, the question also, from the question that I'm going to ask, Chair, it moves from an assumption that, as correctly as she has alluded, that she has gone through Chapter 10, particular Section 195, as you said earlier on, but also you have read the advert, but also you have gone an extra mile to familiarize yourself with the public service as it went to. So, Chair, I will start with that preamble to make a follow-up, if I may, first, and then I will also go to my principal question that I would like to ask you. the latter part of your response, where are the gaps and what would you suggest needs to be done? That's the one following up on Honorable Doctor's question, Honorable Member. My question then, which is my principal question, is around developmental state, where I would like to get your understanding around that space. You might have responded indirectly in some of the points. My question is a twofold. With the preamble that says that the NDP, which is National Development Plan, makes an emphasis, quoting for it that from it directly, South Africa needs to build a state that is capable and playing a developmental and transformative role. Question then would be, one, what are the challenges that hinder public administration in potentially realizing the developmental role, as it were, pronounced in the NDP? Secondly, what sort of public service is required by South Africa to achieve the developmental objectives, as it were? Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you, Ms. Nguyen.
Thank you, ma'am, for the question. The first one, if I'm not mistaken, just to clarify on the gap. When I look practically, not theoretically, there is no trust anymore between our people and the public service, in that they are going to serve them when they go to the department and they need service. There are lots of talk that you will go and queue, but no one will be there to help you, or by just giving an example. People will come to apply for domestic violence. I'm giving a practical example. They will come, and then they will tell me, their attorneys will tell me, ma'am, I sent my client to come and apply for a protection order. They were told that by 11 they are closed. I say it can't be possible. Or maintenance, it can't be possible. Because I believe that our work hours are 7:45 up until 4 o'clock. I don't know where that policy comes from. So I don't think full service is accorded to our people out there. I'm from rural communities where people are coming from far. When we go to work, they are already there. They are already there by 5 o'clock or by 6 o'clock because transport is not even there. They have that one transport. And they are told that by this time you can't apply for a domestic violence when someone is going through abuse of some kind at home, which I don't think it's proper for our people to do. And there is that mistrust. There are also lots of, we deal with fraud cases, SASA cases, where people come and apply, and then all of a sudden when the money comes back, they are not getting the money because one of the employees got the money. So there is that lack of trust. People have lost trust on our public servants, and it is for us to find out from the employees what brings about this. Is it poverty? Is it greed? Or is it that they are not paid very well? And to address that. When I go to, I believe the second one was the National Development Plan. The second, yes.
No, I think you would ask through the chair so that I can repeat the answer. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. According to what I understand, according to my understanding, the National Development Plan
wants to build a better South Africa, better economy for all of us. And in order to build a better economy, better South Africa, we should, as a society, we should, as a society, come together and see where can we, all of us, the public servants, and the communities, improving the life of each other. Improving the life of each other, it means me as a community member going also to a department or an organization where I need help, and then I get help that I need from my place to that department and back home. And then we are building a better society for all of us. And then we're coming together, we're working together to build our nation. The third one, Chair?
Chair, the first one was a follow-up of the question which we have responded. The second one we have responded, and the very last one, I'm sorry to be confusing, because it's on our meeting. I think you have answered it, but I'll repeat the question so that you've got a sense of comfort that you have responded to. What sort of public service is required by South Africa to achieve its developmental objectives? I think the scenario of protection order scenario also wants to address that thing. But if you feel that there's something that you're committed to, then thank you, Chair.
No, I don't think that's anything. Thank you, Mayor.
Follow-up questions.
Okay.
Mr. Minister, maybe if one can put it like this, in terms of developmental stage or in terms of national development plan, what would be the role that the public service should play in order to make sure that we are in line with the vision of the NVP 2030? Thank you.
Thank you. According to my understanding, the National Development Plan 2030 vision needs to develop South Africa be a development state. All of us coming together, working together, the public service. Remember, they are the largest employer in the country. If they come to the table and be there for everyone, those who are dealing with people on a daily basis, they are there to help our communities in order to make their life easier. And those departments that are supposed to to help the other departments in maybe infrastructure, in order for them to be able to help our communities, they also come in place, and then we all work together. There be departmental relations in order for all of us to work together. You may not be working directly with the public, but you can help that one who's working directly with the public in order to make their work easier. So I believe it will help to build a more organized, developmental, democratic state in South Africa, where everyone is happier.
Just members, you know the sequences. I will not call you. You know when it is your turn to ask questions.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Good morning, Ms. Dimitri.
Good morning, ma'am.
My question would be on good governance. Ms. Nizi, effective governance in the public sector encourages better decision-making and the efficient use of resources. Now, my question is, how would you define good governance? That is my first question. My second one would be, what are the five main principles of good governance within the context of a democratic government and efficient public service? Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, ma'am. According to my definition, I will say good governance is where, yes, the authorities, they are decision, they make decisions, but you rope together, you they should be what can I say, the public also should come on board in order to make those policies, not just be imposed on them. And then it does work well governing the people, because you have gone to the people and say, this is what we want to do, we want to hear from you. Giving an example, I'm sorry if I'm taking time, I was hearing today on the news on the Department of Education, which is also a public service, about what they are going to do, the subject that children, they will start to learn about the sexual whatever and all that, and the public were not informed. And I believe good governance is where you talk with the public and you agree, you come together. Yes, you cannot agree on everything. Not everyone will see what you want to do and agree with it. But you will know that the majority of the people, they are in support of what you you want to do. You can't impose things on people. We go there, we vote for you in order for you to come back to us and say, this is what we want to do. What are you saying as the public, as our voters? And we have our say. And I believe there will be good governance because of that. And the five principles of good governance, Chair, I may not know the five of them and all of them, but I believe public hearings on whatever we want to do, it will do, and going to the people, as I have already explained, in order for the government to reach out to people, because the government cannot be governing itself. The government governs the people. And ma'am, I believe maybe that's what will make good governance better for South Africa. For me, it's about the people. Maybe I may not know the principles to mention them one by one, but I believe being with consulting with the people and knowing what we should be doing together, it means good governance for all of us. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. If there are no follow-ups, proceed. Mr. Nisi, there's a huge loss of public monies due to corruption, especially with public servants doing business with the state. It's a big issue that's been around for a very long time and continues to plague the public service. So in your view, how could public servants be stopped or prevented from doing business with the state, since there is already legislation in place to prevent this practice, and yet it is still continuing? What are the practical things that need to be done, since the legislation is already in place, to actually prevent this from happening?
thank you, sir. Yes, there is a lot of corruption in public service, and I believe that we can come on board and make sure that this corruption, maybe it may not be stopped completely, but we can do something in order to, like I was talking about public servants putting their money into the public purse because they are doing work with the state. I mean, they are salaried employees. I was saying, why don't we look at them, have workshops with them? What is it that is their, no one will tell you it's greediness. No one will tell you that they are doing that, but we do get people who are reported, but nothing is done about it. And another thing, there will be investigations in that section or in that department, but we don't see the finality of it. So people, they don't see anyone being prosecuted, anything being done to them that they have done something wrong. And then it continues each and every day. We shouldn't have all these commissions on state captures, on PIC commissions, all these commissions that are there, that we are using the taxpayers' money on the commissions, because it starts from there. It starts from our public service, where they are very corrupt, and they are corrupted by the people, sometimes from private sector, from outside. That is because they need the jobs also from private sectors, and then they corrupt our own people in our own space because there will be those kickbacks. So I believe if we can do the prosecutions, we can investigate these people when they are reported, when we find them with the hand on the public money, then the prosecution follows, instead of a person being suspended, and then after suspension, you don't hear anything. After 3, 4 months, 5 months, you hear that the person is back again. Then it doesn't stop, it keeps on recurring. It goes and goes and goes because no one is being prosecuted for anything. There will be 1 in 1,000 that are prosecuted. So I believe maybe that will help also. And we recommend it to the senior managers that that should be done.
I said to members,
I'm not going to call you. If you want to ask questions, shoot, so that we must be fast.
Okay.
I'm not going to call you by name.
Okay.
Thank you, Honorable Chairman. Thank you, Honorable Nancy. Just a follow-up on the question. There is this perception, I'm using that word very careful, that some of the senior managers don't want to be elected. As a legal person, you know that I must give consent for me to be elected. It cannot just be done without me knowing. What is your view, and how can we then also press upon them to be elected? So is to get the suggestion from you to assist us to do better in the public spaces. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Yes, we read about that, we hear about that in the news, that there are those senior managers who don't want to be vetted. And, ma'am, I think they should be, maybe we should come up with that legislation that, let me give a practical example. In the police where I was, they don't ask you
whether you want to be vetted or not. You just get vetted and you get your clearance certificate, whether you are a fit and proper person to do the job, whether you have criminal cases or not. And now people have already been appointed. And I think that's what the judgments are saying, that you have already appointed this person. And now you come around, you say you want to vet this person, and after vetting, you want to vet this person. And he's already there, employed by you. And then when you vet this person and you find that he's not a trustworthy person, are you going to dismiss the person, which is unlawful? So I believe vetting, when you are, before you are appointed, you should agree that you are going to be vetted before the employment, before the appointment, because it is very difficult now to force the people who are already inside the public service, and you say that you want to force them to be vetted. What are they scared of? Because if you are not scared of anything, you will allow the authorities to vet you because you know that you've got nothing to hide. So I believe our human resource policy, it should change, and people before the appointment should be vetted. And I think that those who are inside, it needs a lot of research and all that, people's mind, how to come about with a law that will force them. Remember, the people nowadays, they know their rights. They will say, you already employed me, and you already employed a killer, a serial rapist. You never vetted them. But from outside, it will be easier.
You have no question? Okay, Mr. Chu?
No, it's not his question, sir. I don't know whether should I proceed.
Yeah, sure.
We have already greeted you with Sibisi. Honorable Sibisi, I'm going to ask you two questions, three questions, six and seven. But my first question is about the oversight, as you would be allowed or you'll be instructed to do oversight on the public service administration. My question would be in twofold. How do you think the PSC can, one, strengthen its own oversight, and two, oversight by Parliament? Thank you.
Thank you, sir. As I already answered the doctor, to me, it's my own opinion. I don't think there is a, we're talking strengthening the own oversight of the PSC, or of the Public Service Commission. Thank you, sir. The Public Service Commission, it must itself be a role model that we've got policies in place that strengthens. Before you go to other people, you must check yourself first. You must check your office first, that your office is in place, and look at the gaps that are missing in the office. Before you go and check someone else, you must look at yourself first. So they must look at those gaps and say to themselves, where should we come in as the PSC in order to strengthen our office, in order, because according to me, they are also public servants. They are also there to serve the people. They are there in order for them to make sure that the employees out there are getting a good service from our public service. Are we doing the correct thing? And if we are not doing the correct thing, how do we go about it in order to strengthen this office? From this office, are we connecting with the people out there? Are we connecting with the managers out there, with the departments out there? Are we doing the correct thing according to our mandate as the PSC, in order to go and tell that someone that whatever you are doing is wrong? And I believe that maybe coming to the second question, Parliament should be there to oversee what the Public Service Commission has done. What have they done in order to promote all that is required of them, the constitutional values and principles that are required in Section 195. The Parliament should oversee to it. What is it that you have done? Have you gone out there? Have you connected to the people? Have you connected to the senior managers? Are they doing the correct thing? They should come now and then to report to Parliament, in order for Parliament to find out from there if they are doing things according to their mandate, and if they are independent and they are not doing things haphazardly according to their own policies and all that, but they are doing things according to the mandate that is required of them, and they are there in order to touch the people even on the ground level. So I believe they should always be reporting to Parliament in order to see what exactly have you done in order to close the gap between the public service officials, the employees, and the people out there.
Thank you, ma'am. Can we move to further question, which is question number seven. During the State of the Nation Address, President outlined seven priorities for the sixth administration. Among is to build capable, ethical, and developmental state, which is what Chapter 10 of the Constitution envisages. So now, according to you, what role should the PSC play in ensuring a realization of building capable, ethical, and developmental state? Thank you.
Thank you, sir. In order, according to me, in order to build a capable developmental development state, the PSC should see to it that it's doing its function of, I think I will come again, of it's doing its function of promoting the values as enshrined in the Constitution. Human rights are protected. And by human rights being protected, everyone out there, it doesn't matter the poor or the rich, they are accorded a equitable treatment. They are treated equally in order to build a capable state, a development state. People, the PSC should make sure that as they oversee the public service, it should make sure that the public service is there in order to serve the people, and also in order to protect the rights also of the employees and even of the employers. It can't be the communities only. Also, the rights of the employees and the employers. And then by that, by having that good relationship between the PFC overseeing that good relationship between the employers and the employees, or I can say the senior managers and the employees of public service, and knowing that the relationship is good, this, it cascades down to our communities, so that everyone, when they go to work, yes, you, not everyone will be happy, but the majority will be happy, and we will be able to build a capable state where all of us, we are working together in helping each other to build a democratic country. Where we call it a democratic country, it should not be democratic for some people and other people are getting poor and poor while the rich are getting richer. It should be a capable and development state where everyone is developed. So the PSC also in the sixth administration will be helping that the government services, they are there in order to play a role in this.
I said I'm not going to remind members. You know which question you are going to ask. Stick to that.
Thank you, Chairperson. I welcome. I'm joining the other members who already welcome Ms. Nisi to this interview. Ms. Nisi, my question, my first question is, the financial disclosure framework is aimed at preventing conflicts of interest by requiring members of the senior management service to disclose their financial interest. Now, provide an explanation on how the financial disclosure works.
To my understanding, mostly it's SMSs that they do the financial disclosure, and this, it helps to audit their finances. Where the money that they are having, where is it coming from? And it's a kind of an audit, not to get really to their personal life, but you audit the style of the SMSs, because we know their salaries, and then they must disclose their finances, where they are getting the money, in order for us to prevent even corruption, so that someone giving an example cannot say, I've got 10 million. They need to disclose where the 10 million is coming from, because as I said, there will be maybe those corruption related cases where there are kickbacks and all of that, so they must be audited. If you are having 10 cars, we should know where the 10 cars are coming from, because according to your salary, it is not, you cannot afford to have such and such a car, the 10 cars of this nature amounting to this amount, and so many properties while you are earning this much. So it will be proper for SMSs to disclose their finances, so that we know, and that I think maybe we go back to that vetting. That's where maybe the problem lies, of people not wanting to be vetted because of that financial disclosure, because you have to disclose everything that you have and how you came about having it. So it will help us to audit our people and know that they are living according to their means.
Chair, I would love to do a follow-up question on that one, to say, Ms. Mnese mentioned that you found that some people have got 10 cars, this and that. It's clear that she meant each and everyone, particularly the senior managers, for their salaries to be equal to their lifestyle. Now, how can the Public Service Commission eliminate that?
I believe for the public service to eliminate that, because for me, that if you are living beyond your means, beyond what you are having, and then it may not mean this, but mostly it may mean that there are some corrupt elements somewhere. And I come to what the honorable member said about vetting of our members, that before appointment, we should vet our members. And I was very honest that those who are inside not allowing to be vetted, because they know about all those things, maybe there should be some policies, some laws that will make them to be vetted. But those who are still outside and coming in, they should allow themselves to be vetted in order to eliminate this. Because if you are not vetting them, then you cannot eliminate it. When they come in, they say that you cannot say this person is corrupt after you have appointed the person and is inside. Know about the person before they come in, so that all these things, that is why I said, even the commissions, they won't be there if before appointment you know that your candidate that you are going to appoint, their financial status is like this. You vet them and then everything is in order. And if people then are living beyond their means, then that will need the investigators, those who are inside, the investigators, to do that vetting. And they must explain all that in order to get security clearance. They must explain how they got that example of 10 cars, which is just an example, how they got to 10 cars, meanwhile they are earning 5 rand.
Thank you, Chair. The second question is, the power to appoint in South Africa is assigned by Section 3, Article 7 of the Public Service Act. Ministers or MECs can delegate the power to the officials within the department. And then my question is, what are the major obstacles in the recruitment system in the public sector? Is the public sector recruitment system effective in order to ensure professional and capable state? So what can be the role of the PSC in eliminating unethical practices in the recruitment system in order to ensure public servants appointed based on merit. And safe to say, Ms. Mnisi is quite worried about this. Earlier on, I heard her talking about the attitude of managers removing relevant people and bringing people who are unskilled. So how can be that be kept intact within the public sector?
Thank you, ma'am. Maybe to start with a second question, the Public Service Commission can come in where it needs to work together with our human resources, that when you are looking for an engineer. When you are looking for an engineer, in your advert, this is what you need to specify, that you are looking for a certain kind of a person, as a skilled person on engineering matters, whatever a kind of engineering that you are looking for. And you put all the requirements in the advert that you are looking for in order for that person. So the human resource, it should be trained in when they issue adverts, what kind of people, the skilled people, they are looking for, if it's a professional job, if it's something that needs skills, how to advertise in that advert. And it can work together with our human resources officials. And the power to appoint, it should rest with the managers that are looking for that person. Sometimes we appoint people based on, we know this person. They are eloquent. They know how to talk English and all this. For me, I'm still humbled to be called for an interview. But for me, the interview, it doesn't mean the knowledge, the responsibility of a person when they are in the office. It means a different thing. It's for you to find out who is this person, what they can do, and all that. But you find that I'm very eloquent in an interview, but when I'm in the office, then it's something else. Like someone once said, I remember we are from the old school, the judge, they couldn't even read their judgment. It doesn't mean they are not capable of doing their job. Yes, it just means what schools were you taught in. And I believe there shouldn't be any political interference in appointing people, because sometimes even vacant funded posts, they remain vacant and funded because the senior manager wants someone who doesn't qualify for the job. So if there won't be any interference, there is transparency and there is openness in interviews, then the right people will be employed for the right job instead of being a political interference, and then you will find that you've got the right people in the right place because there was no interference. So I think we should start with our human resources, and then there will be those posts. Maybe they need the politicians to come in, but I believe in most of them in the public service, they don't need it. They need the professionals, they need the skilled people, and all that in order to appoint the people.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just building on what you said at the end there, do you think that any policy of cadre deployment is ethical, is appropriate, or should it be abolished?
Thank you, Doctor. I believe politicians, they've got a role to play in the political environment. I am not a politician. I will know how to sit there as a politician and argue as a political person. That will need the political appointments. It's fine. It's well. But in places where we need skills, where we need professionalism, anyway, even if a politician is appointed in a certain role, those professional ethics will be needed. But I don't think cadre deployment is ethical. According to me, I may be killed for this, but I don't think it's good. When I say killed, I just, maybe it's a strong word to say. I apologize. But I'm just saying, for the skilled posts, for professional posts, where you need an auditor, it can be a cadre deployment. Yes, deploy the cadres in political appointments. That is their post. They know what to do, and they will do well. You need an engineer, employ an engineer, not a cadre, and then for them to do the work and do the work well.
Ms. is there any question you would like to put to the panel?
It's not really a question, it's a comment. I just want to thank the panel for inviting me for the interview and the professionalism and your admin staff from Polokwane up until here. It was a good journey because of the people that you have, capable people, and I believe they are there to build a capable and development state, like the Honorable Member said. And I'm really humbled, and I appreciate it. All the way from Polokwane to Cape Town Parliament, it is my first time to be here, and it humbles me, and it makes me feel that I'm part of South Africa. I'm here today with the Honorable Members, and it's really an honor for me. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Nathan. You are aware that we have a number of people to interview. At the end of all the interviews, you will be informed of the outcome of this interview. Thank you very much once again. Thank you.
Thank you, sir, and thanks to all the honorable members.